Hello, welcome to Locked On Sharks, the premier hockey podcast of your favorite team in the Bay Area. And on today's episode, I have Mitchell Brown of Elite Prospects on, where we're going to talk about Cameron Lund and get to know more about the Sharks' second round pick. So all that and more on today's episode of Locked On Sharks.
Your Locked On Sharks, your daily podcast on the San Jose Sharks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm your host, JD Young, contributor at Fear the Fan and San Jose Hockey Now. I want to thank you, of course, for making us your first listener of the day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. And of course, you can find us on YouTube. And in today's episode, I have Mitchell Brown from Elite Prospects, who's been on the show before, but I wanted to get him on to kind of dive into Cameron Lund a little bit more and learn more about the Sharks prospect. And, you know, if you're kind of, if you don't remember, or if you want kind of a refresher. So Cameron Lund, he was the second round pick of the Sharks. They picked him with pick number 34, 6'2", 192 pounds center, who's going to be playing this year at Northeastern University. Last year played on the Green Bay Gamblers, who were a really bad team. In 62 games, he had 25 goals, 25 assists for 50 points. But you know, Mitchell will talk about how, you know, Cameron's game changed from the beginning of the season to the end of the season and how that's kind of really set him up for success. So make sure you, so I hope you guys enjoy my discussion with Mitchell Brown. And now we bring in Mitchell Brown, Director of North America Scouting over at Elite Prospects. Mitchell, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, JD?
Not too bad. Peek behind the curtain. We were about to restart recording and my little guy had to go poop. So I had to delay this. But we're not here to talk about little kids poop. We're here to talk about Cameron Lund, who the Sharks picked in the second round of the 2022 draft. And let's start with this. How would you describe Lund's game in one sentence?
He's a shooter, particularly off puck, getting open, under pressure, who morphed into a puck-dominant playmaker later in the season.
Ooh, that's good to hear. Because, I mean, we saw a little bit of that shot, especially in the Sharks' three-on-three prospect scrimmage, where, you know, especially with all the open ice, and given some time and space, that guy can shoot, right?
Absolutely. And just, like, the way that he gets open, the way that he's able to shoot under pressure, and the way that he gets the puck to the middle before shooting, all scream an NHL player.
That's really good to hear, especially for as the Sharks are continuing to kind of build their draft, their prospect pool, which was pretty barren, or, you know, a couple of years ago, but has kind of started to fill up nicely. It sounds like adding Cameron Lund could be, you know, a good fit for the Sharks. But so let's start with Lund, who you guys had ranked 49th at Elite Prospects, but he was picked at pick 34. Was this a reach, or do you think it was pretty justifiable once you got to this part of the draft?
Yeah, I thought it was a perfectly reasonable pick. At the end of the day, you're looking for an NHL player. I think Cam Lund has a reasonable chance of becoming an NHL player. And when you contextualize his season a little bit more, playing on a bad Green Bay team that often let games get away from them late, he was a guy who found ways to improve and evolve and make more of an impact down the stretch than he was earlier in the season. Oftentimes, as teams get worse, you see players go in the opposite direction. So his progression this year was significant. And you look at, say, the underlying statistics, so stuff like expected goals, playmaking stuff, entries, he was near the top of the draft class in all of them. For example, these are just the comparables over the past few years of players who posted similar results. Zachary Leroux, Dylan Gunther, Oliver Wahlstrom, Samuel Poulin, Matthew Coronato. And, I mean, you keep going down the list and you see names like Rucker McGroarty, Jagger Furkas, Cutter Gauthier, Dylan Cousins. So all of these kind of shooters who have a retrieval and off-puck game with some playmaking ability mixed in. And those are all, like, top-end prospects for the mm-hmm. most part. And so you manage to get a player like that in the early second. I think it's a great pick. For me personally, I thought there were a few better players available, but you go crazy if you start analyzing the draft like that, because you won't like a single pick in that case.
That totally makes sense. Yeah, I thought they would go defense there personally, but they followed it up at pick 45 with Matthias Havlid, who I think might be a steal at number 45 for the Sharks. But so you mentioned that he was a shooter first, that kind of morphed his game into a more kind of playmaker and puck retrieval type of player. What do you think is his Lund's best quality that you saw?
Right now, it's his combination of retrieval and shooting. Mm-hmm. So it's a relatively uncommon archetype in the NHL. But I think what makes Cam Lund particularly exciting is that when he gets the puck along the boards, he uses his frame and then spins off pressure immediately. There's not really a, I'm going to punt the puck and wait for a point shot kind of thing. He's trying to get to the middle as soon as he possibly can and then pull the trigger. Throughout the season, as I mentioned, the playmaking improvements, he started using the give and go off the boards. We'd pass to a teammate, then he'd sprint to the net, he'd get the puck back and then shoot it. And one of the most exciting things that he does is off the rush, he'll get the puck, he'll fake like he's going to go wide, wait for the defenseman to pivot, and then cut inside on their heels, and then in one smooth motion, rip a shot. And he has all sorts of little creative tricks in the way that he does it. He'll shoot it off his outside leg, off his inside leg, he'll shoot it in stride. He'll shoot it and pull it around while he's on one leg to change the angle on the goaltender or shoot around the feet of a defender. And when he's doing that cut to the middle, he's loading his shot in one motion. Mm. So when you look at players doing that, if they're going to play that game in the NHL, they need to be able to combine the cut and the shot. You can't cut and then wait and then shoot in the NHL. He already does it. And as his skating continues to improve, it's going to become even more and more of a weapon going forward.
All right, guys, before we continue with Mitchell Brown and we get more into Cameron Lund and kind of what he needs to do to take that next step for the Sharks, I have a message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. If you're one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned, what's the worst that can happen? You can end up driving below the speed limit. It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is your reaction time is slowed way down when you're high, and not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you're ever using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. And you mentioned his skating. Is that the kind of the thing that you need to see the most improvement from him going forward?
Yeah, it's a mixture of a few different things. I think overall his game is a little bit immature and inconsistent. So the skating, It improved throughout the season. So full credit to him on that. He also has good skating patterns in general. He's not a guy who's explosive or particularly quick, but he's deceptive. He uses crossovers, fakes one way, fakes the other, and then he'll integrate the way that he carries the puck into that. So he'll fake one way, bring the puck across his body, which then the defender is going to reach in, of course, and then he'll pull it back underneath their stick and whatnot. But for him, it's more of an inefficiency thing. Which, again, this is a player who was forced into a puck-dominant role, and it took him a while to learn and develop and how to do that in the USHL. And so he'll throw the puck away blindly. He'll make the odd poor pass under pressure. And defensively, there are many games where he does not care at all. But his team also was losing games like 10-2, so who really cares at this point, yeah. Right? and the physical side of his game comes and goes, but we see this all the time, just like with the great Shane Wright debates, like that were just so annoying on Twitter. It's, is he managing the game or is he just being lazy? And as the game picks up and time and space becomes less on the ice, these players often make decisions quicker. They become more engaged. They become more proactive because they have less opportunity or less space to work with. So I don't think that's a huge long-term issue, but all these little things combined might be what keeps him out of the NHL. If none of them improve, if they all stay at the same level, but based on what we've seen throughout this past season, 2020 or 21-22, he's on an upward curve, and I don't think it's going to be much of an issue going forward.
So you mentioned the USHL team, the Green Bay Gamblers, were just awful. Was this the thing where you kind of think where he might have been sometimes having to do a little bit too much or just didn't have quality teammates that might have led to some of these bad habits for him?
Yeah. So the coaching first off was quite poor throughout the season. There was very little structure to what they were doing, and they were a team that had a tendency to collapse. They would keep things moderately close because Cam Lund would be sprinting up and down the ice doing everything by himself. And then one or two goals would go in and the late second, early third, and then the games would just get away from them there. And then they traded away their top player, Jackson Hallam, at the trade deadline, and then it just got worse and worse from there. And of course, when you're a notable prospect, especially like Cam Lund was coming into the year, he was put into those top 6 minutes pretty much straight off the hop. And it was rough at first, and he improved. And again, it's tough to get up for games when you know your team is like, oh, we're signing up. You know, if we don't get if we don't allow double digit goals, that's a success at this part of the season. So it was really bad. Again, part of the reason why I really liked him, though, is the progression throughout the season and how you're able to see the development of skills in an area in which you don't normally see that. Go back to the playmaking thing. You don't see a guy go from just shooting the puck every chance he gets when his team is okay-ish to then becoming a playmaker as his team gets bad. Usually they just double down on bad habits. And for Cam Lund, he started trying not just to like pass, but he was starting to manipulate defenders, bring them towards him, then pass through them. He was trying to find the trailer, and he was trying to use his playmaking to then bolster his shooting game. So just an uncommon development curve for sure. And it's something that I think when you look at a player like him, I think it's a real possibility that he could end up being a, say, a third liner and bring a unique skill set at that.
You mentioned this kind of transition from him. You don't see this very often, right? Like, is this something that we should be worried about because we don't see this, you know, someone goes from a straight shooter to kind of this playmaker? Or do you think this is more of a pro thing where it's like, look at how well he can kind of round out his game?
Exactly, the latter. He's diversifying. He's adding more tools to his toolkit to solve problems on the ice. And in the NHL, to be a shooter, there's a threshold of playmaking that you have to have. Mm-hmm. And later in the season, he achieved that. So he might kind of, his game might kind of go back to being more shooting focused than it was later in the year in Green Bay. And I think we're going to see that with Northeastern as well. He's going to be more of a shooter in that structure, but he's going to have the playmaking now to be able to complement it and be able to make the best play in many situations. Whereas before, he was either shooting or nothing.
Gotcha. And so you mentioned Northeastern where you think he's going to be more of a shooter. What is your kind of expectations for him, you know, especially his freshman season and then kind of as he continues to grow and develop with the team?
Well, the interesting part of Northeastern this year is that they should be quite exciting. They should be a good team this season. And it is Hockey East, and Hockey East is very strange. I will concede as much. You never really know what's going to happen in Hockey East. But they have Yakov Novak, Aiden McDonough, Riley Hughes is quite fun. And of course, they have Jack Hughes, the second rounder to the Los Angeles Kings. You add him into the mix, maybe you put him on the same line with, say, Sam Colangelo, an Anaheim Ducks prospect who plays kind of a similar power shooting game.
He was a Chicago Steel guy a couple years ago, right? On that like crazy Chicago Steel. Yeah, because it was all those guys in Chicago Steel, and then there was like Gushin, who was like the one guy who was like in the scoring range there. Yeah, okay, sorry.
Yeah. So there's a lot of players that he can work with here. He can play off them. He can adapt his game to play. You know, if he's with Colangelo, you're going to see a little bit more playmaking with from him. If he's playing with, say, Gunnar Wolf-Fontaine, you're going to see a little bit more shooting from him. If he's playing with Jack Hughes, you're probably going to see more of like a north-south style to complement Jack Hughes' off-puck game. So there are a lot of different ways that he can fit into that lineup. And again, as we've talked about with the evolution, it's just more ways for him to impact a game. It's just more ways for him to earn minutes on this Northeastern team that has like 10 NHL draft picks.
All right, before we finish up with Mitchell, I want to take a quick break and, of course, let you guys know about Locked On NHL. They've got you covered right now with everything that's going on in the NHL, getting you guys ready for the 2022-2023 season. They just finished up all their division-by-division previews, so you guys can go check that out. So make sure you guys go check out Locked On NHL wherever you get podcasts, and of course, subscribe with YouTube as soon as you're done listening to this podcast. So this Northeastern team potential, like, deep run for them, like when it comes to the playoffs and type of such, so we might get a nice big sample size of Cameron.
Hopefully. I don't think they're going to go deep into the NCAAs. Mm-hmm. I also don't trust them at all.
Oh, no.
But with Devin Levi and Nett, you never know.
Yeah.
And I also think, again, there's so much talent there, and they really, really like, they've shown that they have good coaching and good structure. So I think it's reasonable to expect them to be a top 2-3 team in Hockey East. Mm-hmm. And of course, with Devon Levi, like, you never know. They might get outshot every single game, outchance, and he might stop like 50-51 as they win as they win everything on throughout the season.
Goaltending the great equalizer to all. So all right. So we've seen, you know, a lot of these college guys, especially kind of these, you know, first or second round picks where it's maybe 1 or 2 years at college, you know, like Thomas Bortolo, who I probably a little bit more highly touted prospect. But do you think Lund, is he going to be there like 2, 3, 4? How long do you think he's going to be in college for?
He's probably a 3-year guy. So Okay. You're going to probably need a year to kind of figure out where he fits in the lineup, where he's going to be most optimally used. He's going to get minutes. He's going to play. He's going to be good next season. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of figuring out the best fit. And then the next 2 years are going to be about him trying to maximize his point totals, maximize his impact on the game, and being put in that top six role where he's going to score. And you also hopefully going to see some continued skating growth, some continued playmaking growth, and just the general things that suggest an NHL player. Now, the one thing that is going for him is he's relatively physically mature compared to a lot of his peers. So his improvements are going to be more mental and mechanical. So oftentimes that can just be a year and he'll be completely caught up and he'll be right on the path that you expect him. You can take him out after 2 seasons. Other times it's a lot longer with more physical focused development. It's a lot easier to project with mental, mechanical. You never really know, but I'd guess he's probably a 3-year player.
That makes sense. And especially with the Sharks, where they seem to kind of like to slow cook their prospects, you know, like sending, especially with juniors, they send it back for the overagers. For college guys, they kind of let them simmer, unless it's a guy like Bortolo who just kind of burns it down, you know, type of situation. So yeah, I think 3 years kind of makes sense for him. So, all right, where do you kind of project him when he gets to the NHL?
Well, on a standard development curve, so we're ignoring what he did last season development-wise, but you expect moderate growth. I think he's probably a clear third, fourth line guy. I think if he continues down the current path that he is, you might see him in more of a top nine role. That is, he'll maybe play on the third line, but he could also slide into a top line role and still be effective. His game will be adaptable and maximized no matter where he plays. So if he continues to develop his playmaking, the skating continues to come along, and of course, as we've talked about, the defense and the physical side of his game naturally ramp up as the competition ramps up, then there's a real shot he's one of those complimentary top nine guys. And of course, with the team that the Sharks are building, it can look kind of bleak at times, but you still see players like Timo Meier, William Eklund. This is a team that is going to be adaptable. And I think their drafting record suggests they want players who can fill different roles in different lineups, play all across the lineup, be, you know, have a relatively fluid forward setup. And he's a perfect fit for that kind of structure moving forward.
Perfect. Mitchell, where can the people find you? And what do you have coming out next, if anything, right now?
You can find me on Twitter at Mitchell Brown. And then head to eprinkside.com. We have next month our top 100 prospects coming out, and prospect pool rankings. Ranks 32 to number one will be running through mid-September to the first week of October. I unfortunately do not expect the Sharks to sit super highly, but there will be a lot worth being excited about just because we remain extremely high on William Eklund and Cam Lund, and Cam Lund and a few others make this San Jose Sharks prospect pool like relatively exciting, despite the fact that a few players haven't developed the way that we anticipated them to.
Well, you know, if one more bad year, get that nice blue chip 2023 draft prospect, and then we'll have our prospect pool will be cooking then. So thank you so much, Mitchell. Make sure you guys go check out everything over at EP Ringside, and yes, talk to you later, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Mitchell Brown on Cameron Lund. You know, I think Lund, it's really interesting how he kind of changed his game throughout the season on what was a really bad Green Bay team. And you know, that's good. That shows kind of a maturity and being able to kind of that problem solving, be able to fit different situations when you're kind of called upon to do different things. So, you know, I think he's going to kind of step into a North Asian team that's supposed to be pretty good and be able to help contribute right away. So, of course, we'll be keeping track of everything Cameron does with Northeastern over on Locked On Sharks on social media. So make sure you guys are following along right now, especially we're starting to get some preseason games going. So, some of the teams are starting to get into action a little bit here. So make sure you guys are following along on Twitter, especially on Twitter, because we can, get those out right away. Facebook and Instagram as well. Of course, you can also find the show wherever you get podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Odyssey, you name it, we're on there as well. You can, of course, follow the show on YouTube. So we're still doing our 3 episodes a week, but we're, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be getting back to the 5, getting ready for training camp. We've got a lot of stuff coming down the pipe. So make sure you guys are following along on there. You can follow me on Twitter at MyFryHole, and then we'll be back on Wednesday with a mailbag episode. If you have a mailbag question, go look on any of our social media pages or on YouTube. There's places there where you can leave a question. I'll try to answer that. So I'm going to probably record that Tuesday night and then have that out for you guys that night as well. So, and then on Thursday, Friday, we will have our get to know the enemy LA Kings. So the Kings are a really kind of interesting team that has actually kind of sneaky good odds to win the Stanley Cup. So make sure you guys are all locked in for that. So, and that's going to do it for today. We'll be back on Tuesday with a mailbag episode. Bye, friends.